on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Hello, hello. This is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And my name's Zara.
And my name's Rich.
And this here is a wonderful program about the video game industry. We talk for about an hour. Feel free to go to chatterboxgameshow.com to learn more about our show. You can also call us at 866-536-1100. We're not sure if the internet feed is actually running right now. We're getting that worked on. May or may not be streaming live on the internet, but you're probably listening to us over podcast, which means we don't have to be live. You can also see some of the stuff that we do outside of the radio show at golgotron.com. That's GOLGOTRON.com, where we write articles and make fun of lots of people. There's also a Golgotron podcast, which we might mention a little bit later again.
That's still going on, huh?
Yeah, we did it.
They're making a weekly gig out of it.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. I wasn't there this week.
You're going to keep doing that?
Yeah.
All right.
It's good. It's a different style.
Giving me the crazy eyes over here, all right?
Yeah, I see how it is. All right. Yeah. Don't be surprised if we drop off a little package, surprise later on for you.
I like talking and then not listening to myself because I think I sound lame.
Yeah, they're getting their radio legs wet. testing the waters.
Right. Well, hopefully you've arrived here with your legs pre-wet.
I tell you, no, it's really good because it creates material for this show because I was listening to it on the way to the station today.
Well, I'm all for that.
So,
but you know this can't go unpunished.
Well, you come up with your own way to punish Rich. That's okay.
Wait, I'm being punished? No.
I'll just leave it at that.
Always. So, I'm not sure. I have a couple things I want to talk about. You have your list.
A couple things.
Of interesting things.
Couple things.
There's stuff.
Let me say before the show started, I was telling Rich, and this is really a unique experience to me because I was listening to the Golgotron podcast, specifically Golgotron podcast number 2. On the way here today, and Rich was saying a lot of stupid things, as I expected. Right? A lot of silly things that I would disagree with or just think he's being emotional and silly. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, the rest of the crew is introducing a topic and saying stupid things, and Rich, like a beacon of hope, like Superman, sweeping in for the save, says something that's not stupid.
Now, see, I really want to find out what this is, because Alon came in here, and he was like, so you said a lot of dumb stuff, but you said one good thing. And I was like, what did I say that wasn't dumb? And he's
right?
Like, I'm not going to tell you. I'm like, oh, you suck.
Right, but it was amazing. So let's bring up this topic. Bobby Kotick from Activision, big head honcho of Activision, he said... supposedly.
The guy who has about like 4 or 5 islands by now.
Yeah. What do we decide? He gets paid $15 million a year?
14.7
or something.
It was a lot.
Probably not counting bonus. But
a high number.
Yeah.
So he made a claim that they're going to have to reevaluate whether or not they're going to continue supporting the PlayStation 3. Basically, the people at Golgotron were saying, oh, he's saying they're not going to support PS3 anymore after a few years.
Well, it wasn't that quote that which I also read today was... It wasn't really quite that black and white, really. I mean, like, he's just saying, oh, well, if it keeps going the way it's going, then maybe it's not such a good idea to support the PS3 because basically our profit margins are better on the other platforms. But what I find interesting about it, which we can loop back to if this isn't actually the topic, is that how could any of such public statements like that be anything other than, for some reason, some kind of very tactically precise kind of maneuvering, which I actually don't understand the impetus behind, but he's got to be saying it for some kind of weird political tactical reason.
You are absolutely right, and I will take it to the logical conclusion for you. But here, what I need to explain to people, and this is why you shouldn't worry, the Golgotron podcast, it's beautiful. I love Golgotron. It's a baby of ours. It's a great site. But some of the people on that podcast, man, like they're starting out. They get it wrong so that we can get it right.
This is going to be good stuff.
Well, I love your Rush Limbaughian style of assertions where there could be no possibility for you to be wrong.
I don't want to put him down because I'm on that show sometimes, and I want to make it good. I want to make it into something great. Now, Rich comes in and he says basically what you said. He's like, guys, they're not going to stop supporting the PS3. He just wants to get them to make a move. It's self-serving. Now, as I pointed out to Rich, perhaps not as eloquent as that, but said the same thing.
Yeah, I said words that I probably can't say on the radio.
Well, that's troubling to me. I'm afraid
So now the real reason why there's a separate podcast comes out.
Yeah, I'm worried one day he's going to come in here and start swearing like they do on the Golden
Cast. I know how to speak on the radio. I haven't sworn on the radio yet.
Good, because I don't have the money to pay for it.
Exactly.
So he comes in and says basically what you said, that it's really essentially a calculated move. And here's the reason. Well, first of all, why is it obvious that it's a calculated move? Why would they stop supporting it? Of course they're not going to stop supporting it, because forget that the Xbox exists and that the Wii exists. There is a platform on which they can make games and people buy games. And the number of PS3s that are out there right now far exceeds the number of PS3 games that were there the first year. And if they were making games the first year when there was a small install base and they made the same profit margin on their games, why would they stop selling games on the system now that there's five times as many systems out there?
Well, I mean, one possible reason could be that even since then, even since last year, the development costs have accelerated further for especially one of the, you know, basically it's the highest technology game platform we have.
Yeah, but why has the development cost of a PS3 game today changed from the development cost of a PS3 game yesterday?
Well, not yesterday, but last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same platform. If a company decides to make a bigger game
it is the same platform, right? But even within the life cycle of a platform, right, the trend has been that everyone's technologically upping the ante, as it were.
But I think, I mean, there's some credence to that, but I think it's negligible. I don't know the real numbers behind it, but I don't think it even approaches the amount.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't agree it's negligible, but it's a fine point, so let's move
on. I don't think it's accelerated at the same rate as the install base has, right? The install base has grown many times the size, and it's not going to cost five times
perhaps,
the cost of a PS3
perhaps.
Game today.
Maybe the install base, but also maybe the buying games base has maybe not actually increased so much.
The only thing that would cause them to stop making the games for it is if it is a dead platform. If people decide altogether, no, we all have an Xbox 360, we're not going to buy games on the PS3.
Well, sure, sure. I mean,
still making money is what it comes down to. They're not losing money on the PS3.
Obviously, but strategically maneuvered Mr. Kotick's point was in the public, like he said it would, it's a good point, right? It's pretty obvious that the PS3 is the platform that's probably the least cost effective just because of the fact that it's the most technologically advanced.
Yeah, but...
And also not as... I mean, I don't think their install base is as big as the other ones even still, is it?
No, of course not. But maybe in Japan there's more of them. I don't know the numbers. I suspect there's more PS3s than Xbox 360s. Rich, you would know.
Oh, in Japan, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, not Wii. I mean...
Yeah, not worldwide. And certainly not their audience, which is Americans.
Yeah.
or I should just say non-Japanese. so the real reason, though, is that if he says... Because one of the things he said was they need to drop the price. And so, yeah, if they drop the price, then there's going to be a big spike in sales.
Well, everybody knows
PS3.
They're dropping the price.
Sure.
It's coming.
But if he puts the pressure on, it might happen faster. And a big thing with companies that are public is always they need to make money now.
I mean, I don't think... Kotick's not going to be able to make Sony drop the price sooner. I mean,
why not?
Everybody's pretty much saying the PS3 price drop is going to be coming, you know, this Christmas season. I mean, they have to get rid of the stock that they have.
Well, certainly Sony would never, ever make it even close to apparent that any such statements by such a person would have any effect.
Yeah, they're not going to let that be known. But if anyone could have an effect at Sony...
Yeah, it's probably him,
Kotick is the absolute number one person who could make it happen.
Yeah.
So I think what he says may very well, you know, move the ships over at Sony. And also look at it this way, like games are purchased within the first short period of time after that particular game is released. So if they have big releases planned coming up soon, and I mean, I don't think they do. They have Guitar Hero 5 coming out and they have the DJ game coming out, but their big games are waiting for Christmas. But he needs to get them to drop the price so that people buy the systems before next year and then the game sell for Christmas. It's padding his fiscal year. That's all it is. Right? They need to get it down. Yes.
He wants more money.
Yeah. And I mean, even forever, the less it costs, the more people will buy them and the more money he'll make. It's very simple. And if it weren't so transparent, it might be more effective to actually charge
yeah.
the price.
Well, it's like just by the very nature of what it is, like, yeah, it is completely transparent. Like, it's like, okay, like, why are you saying this? Come on. Like, yes. You're not just saying this just because.
Exactly. Please. And so, Rich, I applaud you for realizing that it was transparent.
I just hurt myself with my USB.
And for telling the other people on that podcast that you were involved in on Sunday that they should stop worrying because it's just a bunch of crap. So, well done, sir.
Yeah.
Of course, you said a bunch of other stupid crap, like the bowling ball thing. We told Ara.
The bowling right, ball so, thing is stupid.
So I was actually really happy to hear that someone's making a bowling ball peripheral. Not so I can play bowling, but because I always imagined that it would be an incredibly fantastic idea if you had a controller for, let's say, a game like Marble Mania, right?
Yeah.
So Marble Mania.
Are you talking about Marble Mania or Marble Madness?
No, Mania. Marble Mania. So it's actually a Wii game, and it's basically
is that the
like
one with the weird name?
Kororinpa.
Yeah, Kororinpa.
It's basically like Monkey Ball, but not as sophisticated. And one of the cool things that actually in one dimension that it's actually more sophisticated than Monkey Ball is that you can actually rotate the world in any direction, right? And so
yeah,
if you move
not
it,
just a little bit,
right? And if you can turn it 90 degrees, and then suddenly you can go on a wall that's 90 degrees, and that becomes your reference point, and you can go from there. Right, so how cool would it be to have a spherical controller that you can modulate with just putting your fingers on it and then just going like this with your fingers, which I can't explain really in words,
yeah.
But you can just go... That's
just
the sound effect
very,
it makes.
Very slight movements.
And you can just rotate
the
ball anywhere you want. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think that is great. Maybe I'll get it for that reason.
More fun than bowling.
All right, we'll be right back after the break.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
All right, and we're back. It's Chatterbox, video game radio. And we're talking about games. Alon's typing away, trying to hack into some machine somewhere.
Well, you know, we use computers during the show.
Yeah. Well, good. We have to hack into our own computers because that's how we roll over here at the studio.
Now, before we move on, of course, I'm going to remind everyone to go visit uat.edu, the website for our wonderful sponsor, the University of Advancing Technology. Feel free to do that at any time during or after the program. We won't mind if you take a little second to go check out the website.
So, now, I just had an epiphany.
An epiphany.
Yes.
Okay.
It doesn't happen very often.
No, but we love them every time.
And it's a good thing that it happened in the middle of the show, because it gives us something to talk about.
Was the epiphany that we didn't do the Ara quiz last week?
No, that epiphany happened about 3 days ago.
Okay.
Which we're also not going to do this week, but we're probably going to do next week.
Fantastic.
And so I was just... Now, as a lot of the epiphanies I've had lately about video games have surfaced, this one is also about Disgaea. And as you guys know, Disgaea is just a never-ending source of interest for me for various reasons.
Because you like jumping inside of pizzas?
Well, it's like it more has to do with just the psychological phenomenon that it has on me, the effect that it has on me.
Can you remind me the story
from Disgaea 3 again?
So, yeah, so it's
isn't it something about your high schoolers and then the town has taken over?
Well, that's the plot. But the point is that it's such an efficient vehicle for making you play a game and accomplish nothing in the process, and basically just making you feel like crap afterward, like this enormous...
Oh, what video game actually accomplishes something?
Enormous void of guilt because you've spent so much time and you don't feel like accomplishing something. I actually draw a huge distinction between this and, let's say, a lot of other video games where I actually feel satisfied. I don't feel like I've actually, masturbated when I was 12 years old,
okay,
after I'd been told not to, right? So that's kind of the feeling I get when
your
I play this game.
Your parents told you not to?
Well, not just my parents, come on.
But the world, you mean?
Pretty much.
My parents never brought it up.
Well, that's good for you. Thank anyway, you. So what am I talking about? I'm just talking about, like, when I play Disgaea, and I'm sure other people feel this, you just, first of all, there's this intense feeling I'm compelled to play when I'm not playing. Not all the time. But every once in a while, I'm like jonesing for it, like a crack addict.
Even though the feeling you get when you're done playing is that of
yes.
despair?
Well, that of, I guess, the crack addict who, I don't know, has too much crack.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I am losing you a bit.
You just feel like this immense sense of remorse. Like, why did I play this? Why did I choose to spend all this time doing this out of which I've got nothing?
And so can you tell me why it is you do have the desire to play?
So I figured it out, right? So and here's my theory. I mean, at least I think I figured it out. Now, a lot of you have heard me talk on this show about basically I've criticized narrative elements in games quite a bit. And you know that I'm not really – I don't usually play games, and I don't enjoy the narrative in most games. And it's usually the other aspects of games that I find the most compelling and also the most satisfying. And I've realized that there's certain parts of Disgaea, like up to a point, where it's satisfying. And then after that point, it's – that's when the masturbation guilt comes in, okay? And so I was trying to figure out, well, what's the difference, right? And I figured out that once I basically, like, if I played through the story mode and if I had stopped there right after the story mode ended, I think that I would not feel any of this masturbation-related style of guilt, and I would be perfectly satisfied. And the problem with Disgaea is that there's a whole huge amount of gameplay afterward when the story ends, but there's no real...
You mean like credits roll, you finish the game, but then you can keep just screwing around?
Well, yeah. Yeah. And in fact, like let me frame it to you this way. You get to level 90, around 90-ish, give or take, like let's say in Disgaea 2, by the time you finish the storyline. But in that game, there's actually content that will get you up to level 9,000 and beyond, okay? Which is ridiculous. And if you actually spend the time to go through that much of the game, really, like, the story arc probably takes about 10% of your game time or less. And I figured out that there's, I don't know, they do something so well in Disgaea, which is they give you these little carrots, right, which is like the leveling up and the improving of the stats of your character at sufficient intervals to compel you to play over and over and over. But this is a very short-term type of compelling content, right?
This sounds to me like it's the same sort of drive that drives people to get achievement points on the Xbox 360.
It very well could be, and I think that's actually a pretty good analogy, except for the fact that I guess with achievement points it's a little different because they're more visible to everyone, and nobody, unless except for the uber geeks that you talk to and gloat to, will know what level you're at in Disgaea, and no one would care. Yeah. So, although most people,
so it's
don't
just
care
especially
about
embarrassing
anyway.
Because it's a private waste of time.
Right, right. So it's even worse for Disgaea. But anyway, so what's my point? I found out that there's, even if the narrative is kind of boring, even if the story's just really not that interesting, it's just because it's there, right? Just because there's some aspect of it that you haven't revealed yet and that you're anticipating to figure out to see what happens next, that's actually enough to not only compel you to play more, but to give you some level of satisfaction one way or another, you know, to varying degrees, of course, depending on how cool you think the story is. But once you get past that, right, the game still gives you these little carrots of feedback in terms of, like, you know, it encourages you to play more and more because, you know, your levels go up and your spells go up, right? But the interesting thing that happens is that you don't really see any actual novel content anymore. It's pretty much 99% just you watch numbers get bigger after that.
So,
okay. And so here's my summary, right? It's like you get, you know, I think that there's a really strong need to experience novelty. And I think that this is what maps to what most people consider like the story or exploration in games, right? And it's not necessarily story and it's not necessarily exploration that has intrinsic value. But it's this need to find something of novelty as you're doing something. And I think that that's what really compels you to go further, or it's what makes you feel satisfied in some way, right? And maybe it's not the only thing, but I think that this is a pretty big component. And I think what people call, you know, story to be satisfying in games, or, you know, exploration, this kind of nebulous term that people say, oh, exploration is fun, right? I think it's really just different sides of satisfying the need for novelty. And you also have this need even after you've done all these things, right? So the need doesn't go away, but then Disgaea just like starts giving you, it's like the crack dealer, you know? So at first when you're doing the story, he's giving you like lots of crack, right? And then he gets you hooked, And then now it's just giving you just enough crack to get by.
I kind of understand what you're saying. Now, I would dissect it a little bit further.
But you feel like crap. See, so you have now when you're past, like when you're like level 300 in Disgaea, right? It's like now you're the crack addict who just needs enough crack to feel normal.
Okay, so I think we've wasted a good 5 or 6 minutes.
So it sounds like you're just like playing MMOs by yourself.
It does feel like MMO by yourself.
That's what you're doing.
And I've characterized actually Disgaea specifically that way before.
To make this idea slightly interesting, I need to ask the question of why it is you feel like crap playing the game.
So I'll neglect that jab that you threw in the beginning. And why do I think it's interesting in the first place?
No, I'm not. I want to answer the question myself.
Okay.
I don't want to ask you. I want to ask in general and then say that play – because here's the thing. So you might say you're experiencing something novel or you're experiencing story, right, which is – so something novel, right?
So my argument is basically that the satisfaction you get out of the story is actually a part of your innate need to experience novelty. That's basically my thesis here.
Yeah, but I mean, that could then be described specifically as getting a narrative or getting a participating in a challenging experience, right? So I want to...
So novelty can come in many forms, yes.
Transfer this story to another game, something that's completely void of storyline, something like an old arcade game like a Pac-Man or a Geometry Wars or something, even though Geometry Wars isn't old, but you know what I mean, right? There's no story. It's just, here's a challenging gameplay element. Go participate in it and see how well you succeed.
Right.
And really, it's just pointing at things and shooting and getting a score. Or in Pac-Man, you know, collecting dots and getting a score, seeing how long you can survive.
Well, you can characterize it like that.
Now, in an RPG, if there's no storyline, then you're obviously not looking to learn more about a narrative, and you're just going through these parts of a game that are incredibly simple. It's walk over here. You don't have to worry about timing or anything. You just throw a spell at somebody, and if you die, you start again, and you play again, and then you throw a spell at somebody until you succeed. Like, there's no actual challenge in it, or at least not what I perceive as a challenge.
Right. But you do get that reinforcement of getting just enough novelty to get the next bit of
novelty. You get a reward, but you don't feel like you had to work for it. You didn't actually accomplish anything. So RPGs are easy, but you get a story.
That's part of it.
Old school arcade game, you get challenge.
I think there's more sides to it, but...
If Geometry Wars was super easy, would you want to play?
No, but I'd want to play if it was fair.
All right, let's talk about more when we're back.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
All right, we're back. Now, we've only got so much time per segment, and I don't want to take up too much more time on this last topic that we covered last segment, but I do want to publicly apologize to Ara. I didn't mean...
No, it's all good. If you dish it out, you're just going to get it back. That's the way it works.
Well, I can take that, but I didn't mean to say that you were doing just this horrible job explaining something, but I and Rich and everyone else who does a podcast can from time to time sort of ramble on about something that makes sense in our own heads and not realize that it may not make sense to others.
Really, and honestly, I was really trying the whole time just to bring it back to some kind of joke about Tyrone Biggums from the Dave Chappelle show, and since it didn't come together.
All right, so I just want to very quickly summarize. You're saying that there's this game that gives you enough of a reward even past the time of a storyline that you want to continue playing.
Right, it's very insidious because it works on a level that it's almost unconscious somehow because it makes you want to play more, but you find that you don't gain satisfaction from it. And so that's where my crack analogy comes in.
Yeah, and I can understand that. There are times when you're playing a game that you realize, well, this isn't really fun, so to speak. I have this innate desire to get more of whatever it is I need to get.
Right, and just to spend like another 20 seconds on this, right, this brings me back to all the time. I criticize narrative in games all the time, right? And then I finally, through this process of thought, realized the value of a narrative in such a type of game. And also I've recognized that, you know what? It worked on me just in terms of, I played a game with narrative and without even realizing it and perhaps even admitting it, it was actually the narrative that was driving me through to play through the rest of the game.
And that's a really interesting realization. And what I was trying to say before we went to break is that it doesn't have to be a narrative. It could be just something within a game that is enjoyable. So I brought it back to a very basic gameplay type where there's just an arcade-style challenge, like old-school days of Pac-Man or a Geometry Wars-style game, where it's the challenge that you enjoy. So you want to beat your last score, you want to survive longer, you just want to see how effectively you can perform this,
sure.
this gameplay mechanism.
And that's why everybody from the UK loves racing games where the cars can't steer.
Sure. Like, you're presented with a challenge, but if you pulled the challenge out of the game, if you gave me a gun in Geometry Wars that was just way overpowered, it shot very quickly, it had a very wide spread, and you gave me a shield where I couldn't die, the fun from that game would go away. But if they constantly gave me a little bit of a reward, then maybe I would want to play and play until I get this higher reward and higher reward. I equate it to, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who was number one in the game, I saw him play at PAX a few years ago, and he would just go on forever. He knew exactly how to manipulate the game.
What game?
So that Geometry Wars. So that he could literally play forever. Like, every once in a while he would die, but he would get so many points. Like, you get a free guy at every million points or something. And a million points is a lot in that game.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
And so he would just never die. Just keep blowing things up. And at that point, the game isn't fun anymore. But if you just want to constantly get a higher score, like a Guinness Book of World Records, you just want to get a higher score to get a higher score.
Right.
That's the drive, like you're saying, to get the carrots or whatever the hell is in that game, Disgaea. Right. Like, that's a tiny drive to play it, but you get no satisfaction because you've already mastered it.
Metaphorical carrots. Okay. I've been eating carrots every day. So
I didn't understand
about carrots a lot.
What you were saying, but I thought you meant there was actually a carrot in this game. And no, considering you can jump inside of a pizza in that game,
yeah.
I didn't think it was that crazy.
No, perhaps not.
Okay. So anyway, away from that topic, I appreciate what you're saying, and I just wanted to say that.
It's cool. All right.
Yeah.
But moving on to something else. I don't know if I want to run into – last week when we ended the show, I said that I didn't get time to discuss something that I wanted to and which I would then, you know – go forth and write an article about on Golgatron. And I actually thought that I wrote a pretty good article. It probably could have been better. Certainly could have been better.
Let's talk about it, because I'm actually curious what this is.
I'm assuming you didn't go read it, right?
No, of course. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Rich,
no
you
time.
Did, though. And so
yep.
I had actually set forth to write something else, or something with a slightly different point. And here's what I discussed. There is this machine called the Wii, and I felt that Nintendo kind of screwed up in how they presented the Wii to the world. And my explanation is I was going to point out that something like Squee Balls, you've probably never heard of this, Ara, but it was at E3.
No.
It was at E3, and apparently the PR firm for it is right here in Phoenix. So I talked to the lady for a while. I was like, oh, you're from Phoenix, whatever.
If you can't insert a Wii remote into it, I'm not interested.
Yeah. So anyway, there's this company, the company that's making Squee Balls, that's making a hardware motion controller for the Xbox. And they started doing this a while ago before Natal was announced. And then there was all this question like, oh, well, you wasted all your time making this thing, and now Microsoft is making the Natal, so doesn't that make you feel foolish? And of course they say, no, 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 we're still going to release it, right? But I went and tried it, and it looks very much like a Wiimote. I mean, it's got buttons in slightly different places, but it's essentially a Wii remote. But the receiver that would hang on the television, there was one on each side rather than either on the top or the bottom. And it was ultrasound, kind of like the... Was it Samba de Amigo? Yeah, Samba de Amigo used ultrasound.
Yeah.
The original one.
Believe that, I think those...
The Power Glove used ultrasound as well.
Those, Police 911 and Mocap Boxing, if I'm not mistaken.
The arcade versions?
Those arcade games. Yeah, well, the only versions, really.
Well, no, they had Police 911 on the PS2 with a camera.
Did
but
they?
Not,
okay,
in, the, not in the U.S. In Japan and Europe. But anyway, they implemented ultrasound in this Xbox 360 thing, and they made this Squee Balls game, which is basically a party game where you swing the controller and you hit these little ball-like characters.
No physical balls involved.
No, correct. It's just a video character, and you swing at them or do various movements, right? But then they also had the Wii version because they wanted to, oh, well, we have this game. We should implement it with the Wii. And so you would try it on the Xbox, and it wasn't perfect, but it was good. And then you switch to the Wii, and it's far from the good that was in Squee Balls in terms of its control accuracy. And so what I realized is there's a huge company, Nintendo, with a lot of time in research and development, time and focus groups and all that stuff that I'm sure they did, right? And spent surely millions of dollars defining what this mechanism would be that really, I don't want to overuse the word define, but it defines what the Wii is, right? The remote is what the Wii is. And so now that the idea is out of the bag, other companies are coming along and improving it. Sony's doing a way better job. This tiny company that nobody's heard of, and I don't even know their name, is making a product for only $70. Well, with the software and the controller, it's only $70. They're doing a better job in terms of like technical prowess, I guess, or technical achievement with the controller, doing a better job than Nintendo is. And so the article that I wrote for Golgatron kind of left the part about Squeeballs and these other companies coming along and doing a better job and just said, listen, Nintendo had a great idea. They wanted to bring people sort of into the game, so to speak, make it more accessible to people who don't necessarily play games and give you a different experience. And that is a great idea. And it could have been implemented well. And then, you know, before it came out, we were all talking about this one-to-one motion and how awesome it's going to be. And the Red Steel game was like, oh, you're going to be able to wave a sword, and it's really going to wave the sword in the game. And then E3 comes along, and we all play the Wii and realize, oh, wait a minute, it doesn't do what we all, for some reason, thought it would do. It just kind of pretends to know what you do by taking some obscure calculations into account and converting that ever so slightly into game action. And the way that they trick you into thinking that it does something fun is by pre-programming the action in there. Like, yeah, when you swing in this somewhat bowling-like motion, it's going to have a character swing a bowling ball, right?
Right.
But you could also make him swing a bowling ball by just flicking your wrist.
Or wagging.
Yeah, I
or
mean,
waggling.
You can trick it. And if you couldn't trick it, I think it would be a better device. And so then I go on to say, again in the article, and I should dismiss the article now, just go read it on Golgatron. They bring out the Wii Motion Plus, which is a great addition. It does really good things for the Wii. It gives them more control. Now, it still doesn't do one-to-one. It doesn't know your position in space relative to the television or relative to some other point defined by the system, but it knows tilt a lot better.
Well, with infrared, it should be able to.
With infrared, it can. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, and to an extent.
Yeah. But not the same way that we would like it to be.
Yeah, but I mean, it does a pretty good job when it implements the infrared features, but a lot of games don't. Like putting and golf, the infrared doesn't work. Although I did say...
Because you're pointing it at the floor.
Exactly. I did say that they should put infrared sensors on the ground or emitters on the ground, and then it would work better.
They don't necessarily need to know where you're in space because it's relative to the character on the screen. I mean, certain situations,
well, imagine a boxing game between two people where you could sit in front of the TV, or if it's just you and the computer opponent, you could actually move around the screen. And as you moved around your room, rather, it would show the player move to the right or to the left.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be that fun.
Yeah, like Punch-Out does show that when you duck, the character actually ducks.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's because of the accelerometers and stuff.
But
moving left
down
and right, it could sense that. But still, it's going to be faking it.
All right, so what are we getting at with
my point is that they improved their device, but I went on and I extrapolated a lot more, and there was this history lesson involved, saying that Nintendo made no accessory for a console has ever been successful, not as like a shift in gameplay. Like, no one's been able to add on this accessory and suddenly we have a whole lot of games come out.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised that they did this in the first place because it to me was a very Sega-like move. I mean, back in the Genesis days...
Well, here's why it's not.
Right? Sega did that kind of thing all the time.
And I use that example. The Sega CD comes out, they thought it was going to be a revolution. It wasn't. And the 32X tried to do the same thing. Okay, well, if the Sega CD isn't more powerful, it's just more data. Well, let's give it more power. They give it
the
32X.
And then the three games for Sega 32X CD.
Exactly. But the problem is that people are still playing a Genesis. It's not a big enough move to actually make them adopt the format. If you're going to have this accessory add-on, it needs to not be an accessory. It needs to be a paradigm shift. This whole big move to the Saturn.
It has
the Dreamcast
to be the whole thing. You know, I think also part of it is just this whole, like, if you make people buy things piecemeal, then you're just going to lose a lot of people.
Well, yeah, you're segmenting your market. Yeah. And so you need to convince them to move on. It's such a big jump that you need to move on. You have to get the new stuff and completely forget the last one. You don't want people buying the PS2 games when they have a PS3. They need to dump it. We'll talk more about it when we're back.
All right, and we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, where we talk about video games.
Yes, we do.
On the radio. That's why we call it Chatterbox.
Alon found the
video
page.
Video Game Radio.
But let's not talk about that yet. So, again, I'm going to mention uat.edu. I like to mention that a couple times during the show. The University of Advanced Technology, it's where it's at, man. It's where you can go to school. You can learn about making games. Now, before the break, I was discussing this article that I'd written for Golgatron that I thought wasn't totally horrible. And so I was going into this history lesson of back in the day, people tried to make accessories. The Nintendo made the Power Pad. They made the Zapper, Rob the Robot.
The Power Pad was awesome.
Yeah, no, these things were cool. Yeah, sort of. The robot was cool. The Zapper had potential. The Power Pad was cool. But none of them made more than a few games, right? There were a few games for the Zapper. There were literally two games for Rob the Robot, which is the best accessory ever made.
Yeah.
The Power Pad had...
Track and field,
it had the track and field
need.
Games. It had dance aerobics and, like, nothing else.
So here's the funny thing, right? I find it so interesting, and this is really endemic of the industry, and which doesn't seem to learn from its mistakes. And what I'm getting at is that really the whole time the industry was absolutely certain, could not be more certain if in the industry as the aggregate had like a personal identity, that accessories just don't make money. Peripherals don't make money. And it wasn't until, say, DDR that everybody realized, oh, wait a minute, you could make a lot of money with an accessory.
Sort of. And so...
I mean, what came before that, right? I mean, I think it was really like DDR that actually basically just blew everyone's mind.
You know what? It's actually... I don't know the numbers. It's possible that the Power Pad made money. And I'm not defining success here as being profitable. This is a special argument that I'm making, because normally I would define success as making it, you know, a non-negative.
Well, I'm just talking about it just in terms of, you know, not any kind of specific metric, but just in terms of popularity.
So what I'm saying is something that actually takes off, right? So the Sega CD, Nintendo has a bunch of peripherals.
So we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, the Genesis also, I mean, there was a Super Scope for the Super Nintendo. There was the Sega Activator, which was cool idea, but yeah. Turned into nothing.
Activator. You don't use any controller. It's your body's the controller. That reminds me of something.
Yes. So there's a bunch of fun ideas, but they never actually take off. And so then the Sega CD, this is not an accessory. It's a whole platform divergence. It's going to be this great new thing. It expands the possibilities, but it's still turned into nothing because you're segmenting the market and you're not really advancing the technology.
Yeah.
So then Nintendo has this great idea, but they realize during the time of the GameCube, we have this great idea, but accessories fail. They learned from their mistakes. They know that if they release this wand for the GameCube, it's going to fail, even though it's a great idea. So what do? They shrink the GameCube down. They put it in a smaller package. They hide the ports behind a door. And they say, all right, here's a new machine. We give it a funny name so that you forget that we're even a video game company that's been making these weird systems for years that you haven't really liked the last one we made. But we've got this great new control mechanism. And we all know the Wii is just a GameCube.
It's an incredibly smart idea. They definitely mastered that sales pitch.
Yeah, the Wii is just a GameCube with a Wii remote. And so what they did, they decided their accessory wouldn't succeed as a accessory. So they simply made a console to go along with their accessory. And that was huge. So the problem here is that learning that lesson, understanding that lesson, the really understanding it, is what made the Wii possible. Because if it was an accessory for the GameCube, it would have failed miserably. And they knew that.
I agree with that. And isn't it ironic that they're releasing an accessory for the Wii now?
Well, that's the thing. They've released other accessories, but they weren't meant to really change the game. And now they're releasing the Wii Motion Plus, which everyone knows, and I'm sure Nintendo knows, should have been released with it. But they weren't willing to take that risk of whatever extra couple dollars it took for the Wii Motion Plus.
Or... I'm not necessarily sure about that. Do you think that it was actually developed, that technology, completely? I mean, maybe they just didn't.
No, they used the same technology from a Segway. It's just solid-state gyros, which
right.
have been in a Segway for however long Segway's
right, but
now.
let me posit to you this thought that maybe they just didn't sufficiently prototype or develop that particular application for it in time for them to actually be able to release the Wii when they wanted to.
But clearly they knew the intention of this device. They knew what they were wanting to do with it, and they knew what developers wanted to do with it early on before the Wii was even finalized, before
sure.
people were talking about it. They knew that you would want one-to-one motion control, but they decided, okay, we're going to introduce this idea and see how it takes off. And it turns out to be hugely popular, and now they've got to be kicking themselves for not actually doing it the right way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that almost sounds like saying that, like, oh, well, you know, I don't, and this is a terrible analogy, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to bake a cookie, you know, and, you know, I, Nobody likes this cookie, so therefore nobody likes cookies in general, and so I'm not going to try to make any more cookies.
That didn't make any sense to me.
Basically, like, without giving their technology or their idea or their whatever a proper implementation, they tried a half-assed version of it, and because that didn't work or worked, then they basically extrapolate and decide that, okay, well, any further permutation of this will not work.
Yeah, their idea did work. Well, it sold really well.
Well, yeah, it worked for sales, right? Yeah. But, I mean, like, who's playing Wii now?
Exactly, right? The thing is, there are still a lot of people playing the Wii. It's not us. It's not any of the people that listen to us or that we talk to. But there are a lot of people playing it. And the point I make is that that can only last so long. People are going to figure it out. Even the dumbasses who are still playing right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to figure it out.
And there would have been so many more gameplay possibilities to actually give it some longevity and some interest to the hardcore gamers that they claim they haven't abandoned if they had implemented it properly from the beginning. And there's not an inch of my body that believes the Wii Motion Plus couldn't have been implemented in the beginning. It would have been more expensive than it is now, right?
Because I was agreeing until you said that, but... Isn't it interesting that this goes back to what we were saying about novelty, right? I mean, it's like, I think that just the novelty of this has been enough to basically blow out this market and make it make lots of money like crazy for now. But the part that I was agreeing with that you said was, you know, I don't think this is going to be sustainable for the long term.
It's not. And so basically this has been a very successful test bed. It could have been the successful platform. And, of course, in terms of money, it has been. But in terms of, you know, actual gameplay experiences that we want, it fell very quickly to something that wasn't that interesting. And the games that I do like, you know, the Mario Galaxy, doesn't really use the technology that they built into the system. It's just, it could have been done on the GameCube, just like Zelda literally was done on the GameCube, almost exactly the same game. And, you know, the Wii is the current platform, so they released it on the Wii because that's the right thing to do.
Well, they delayed the game a year to release it on the Wii, but...
Are you talking about Zelda or...
Twilight Princess, yeah.
Yeah. Fine, right, because they have to develop a little bit more for it.
I mean, one of the things, though, is with the Wii Motion Plus, I mean, obviously you say accessories haven't succeeded historically.
And the Wii Motion Plus won't.
I think the Wii Motion Plus might. I mean, if games... start to support it. Obviously, developers have already shown interest and said they're going to start supporting that feature, and they're going to pack it in with games like Tiger Woods already. They're going to have it in stuff like Red Steel. They're going to throw it in with, I think, the Wii Sports Resort.
Well, the pack-in element, yeah. I think they're going to throw it in as many games as possible.
Well, if they pack so it in,
right? But that's a different dynamic. But I think they figured out that, okay, we really have to kind of pack this in with stuff, kind of like with the Rumble Pack.
Yeah.
Because otherwise...
But the Rumble Pack only came with Star Fox.
Otherwise, people won't really buy it because it's too incremental, even if it makes the whole thing work as if it ever should.
I can tell you that they're not going to bundle it in with more than three things. It's being bundled in with... not Tiger Woods, but like some, or no, it is Tiger Woods. Bundled with Tiger Woods. It's bundled with Sports Resort, and they could theoretically add it to another game. It's probably just going to be those two.
I think they're doing it with Red Steel, because Red Steel requires it.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You have to have it with Red Steel, so they have to bundle it, because they're not going to sell that game and then have 500,000 people go, why doesn't it work?
Well, they don't have to bundle it, but I agree, they probably
will. Well, they have to bundle it.
But the problem is that really, in order for it to be successful in the way that I'm talking, where any game comes out would truly support it and in a well-designed, well-implemented way, they would have to give it away in the same way that they give away the improved wrist straps and the Wii Remote jackets, where you tell Nintendo, I want one, and they send them to you free of charge. That's the only way that it could be successful. And even that wouldn't be enough because a lot of people simply wouldn't do it. And I mean, I want to role play for a second, Ari. I know you love this. You would love to be the creative director on a project. Am I right?
Let's just say theoretically. Sure.
Hypothetically, you would love to be creative.
I would,
so
absolutely.
I come to you and I say, I'm the programmer on this game, or I'm below you designing the ideas for this game.
Okay,
say,
well, that pleases me if you come to me and say,
yes,
I'm below you.
I'm below you. But I say to you, hey, we're moving forward on this project that involves some motion control, and I really think we should put all of our effort. We have a limited time and limited budget. We should put all of our effort into supporting the Wii Motion Plus. And without the Wii Motion Plus, if you want to make it work without it, okay, but we should really concentrate on making it work with this device that doesn't capture the whole market.
Okay,
how do you feel? Do you think that's a good idea?
Do you want me to say how I really feel, or do you want me to say what the expected response
would be? What the response would actually be.
Actually, if I was in that position, I'd be what I would say was, Let's see if Nintendo can pack them in for free.
Okay. And the real result would be no.
No.
Because
sorry.
The market, not we need to sell this to as many people as possible. We're a small developer. We don't have a lot of money to put in this game, which is probably true of every Wii game. And we have to support as many people as possible. And that is the people who don't have the Wii Motion Plus.
Well, right.
And actually, what I would really want to do if I was involved in something like that was that, I mean, really, it just makes the most sense to concentrate all your efforts on something that's going to accommodate everybody in the market.
Yeah.
But, now, I mean, you talk about third-party developers and smaller developers, stuff like that. The biggest developer for the Nintendo console is Nintendo. So they can decide if their games are going to support the Motion Plus or not.
A few people are going to. Red Steel, sure, it's required. And Tiger Woods works a lot better with it. And Wii Sports Resort, certainly, packed with it, and it uses it well. But it's not going to be a shift. Not every developer is going to do it. And that means that most of the games that come out just aren't going to live up to their potential. So you're going to have a few these small pockets of good ideas that implemented well, but it's not going to be a shift. And so my big prediction, if you go read the article, is that Nintendo will be probably first out of the gate to release a new console where they implement ideas like the Wii Motion Plus, one-to-one motion control, and they're basically the apex of the Wii idea because all they need to do is expand this idea and really solidify it rather than, you know, the new technology that
and
Sony and Microsoft
support have. Higher than 480 resolution.
Yeah, that would be good too.
Yeah.
I think they say, we kind of screwed up. We're going to really make the next one great, and we're going to do it first.
Or we just made tons of money, and now we're going to make even more.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're going to support the hardcore gamers again. We got to go, guys. Thanks for listening.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.